Welcome to the DTFH. Hello, my darling friends. So nice to see you again. I hope you're having a wonderful week. Before we get going with this episode, I'd like to remind you that if you want commercial-free episodes of the DTFH, you can either go to our Patreon, patreon.com/DTFH. You're going to get ad-free audio episodes or become a subscriber on my YouTube. Either way, you'll immediately get commercial-free episodes of the DTFH and you will become part of an elite community of Mensa members, intellectuals, enlightened beings, saints, hyperdimensional creatures, and a variety of other people who I cannot name because they work for federal agencies across the planet. But you can hang out with them. And also, we've been doing live streams of the solo episodes. We've got one coming up week after next. All right, everybody, listen. Holy shit. By now, you've probably heard me yap about one of my favorite movies of all time, Butt Boy. Incredible movie. The link is down there wherever you happen to be picking up this podcast. You must watch it. It's so good. But just a few days ago, I was blessed by getting to go to a screening of Tyler Cornack's brand new film. The creator of Butt Boy has put out a movie with one of my best friends, Mermaid. And I know it would be easy to think that the reason I'm saying it's so good is because I love Butt Boy and I'm friends with Johnny. But no, this is one of the like best movies I've seen this year. It's going to get awards. It's going to be like one of the big movies. I'm sure of it. It's so good. It's dark. It's a comedy. And it involves mermaids and not Splash style Daryl Hannah mermaids. That's probably an old person reference. It's incredible. It also involves drugs. It also has Kirk Fox in it. It's got Kevin Nealon in it, a whole incredible cast of great actors. And I got to talk to Tyler and he said he would do the DTFH and he's here with us today. So everybody, please welcome to the DTFH, creator of Mermaid and Butt Boy, Tyler Cornack. Welcome to the DTFH, my friend. I'm so excited to talk to you.
I've been waiting for this more than anything.
Oh, thank you.
And this is the last thing I'm doing here. So,
you know, man, I have, I have a few favorite movies. And I mean this when my favorite movies in that list, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. In that list, The Shining, and in that list, Butt Boy. And There Will Be Blood too, but you know.
Some high praise.
I mean every bit of it, man. I mean every bit of it. And you know, when you're seeing a really good film, something clicks in your brain. I can't explain it. Like everything happening around you gets paired with watching it. It's so pleasurable. And I remember Johnny Pemberton tells me about Butt Boy. And I hear the title, and I'm like, what are you talking about, man? Butt Boy? Is it porn? Like, what is it? And he's like, no, you don't understand. It's an incredible film. And then I had to convince my wife. I'm like, okay, listen, Johnny has never recommended a bad movie. He's recommending Butt Boy. She's like, what? Butt Boy?
It's a tough pitch to the wife.
It's a tough pitch.
To anyone, yeah.
So this, I thought... I just wanted to ask you before we show the trailer for Butt Boy. Was there a moment where you thought to yourself, maybe I should name it Butt Boy?
There was a moment where a lot of people said that to me that worked on it. I thought it would be interesting where we create more buzz in the sense of like, it is a ridiculous title. What is that?
Yes.
And I think it was a little bit of that.
Yes.
I think, like, press-wise, it actually worked. I don't like the title. I just think it creates, you know, some more buzz than a normal weird indie film would.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you called it that. I mean, I don't know what else you would have called it.
Thank you for saying all the nice stuff, too, by the way. I mean, people would tell me all the time when you would just be pushing it, and it just means a lot because these are such small movies, and anything we can do to get it out there. And it's just refreshing to hear. Like when you make anything weird or strange, you're just like, and you're on the edge of like, you're constantly questioning how you feel about it. And you can't help but care. what people think. And I do care what people think.
Well, I mean, this is like, we'll show the trailer in a second, but this to me, like what you're doing and what I think maybe a growing number of people are doing these days is rebellious in nature. What you're rebelling against isn't necessarily like some actual insidious evil force. What you're rebelling against is the market pressures of people at big studios.
The system.
The system. Mm-hmm. And no one in, no component of the system, at least in the ones I've met, or anything other than wanting to make good shit. But it seems like once you get to a certain tier of budget, the risk begins increasing and increasing. So yes. You're some executive and you get a script, an idea, a pitch. And you're like, this is fucking good, but I can't take the, I can't take the gamble.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So this awful firewall appears where all of these great ideas die on the vine.
Right.
So when something like Butt Boy or more recently Mermaid comes out, you're like seeing that one in a million thing that somehow did it. Whoa, that's right. Crazy. And I can't imagine what it feels like. Did you foot the bill for Butt Boy?
No. The same guy who footed the bill for the new one. Shout out to Bill Morian. He's one of my best friends. We met at film school in L.A. He went, you know, to be on the creative side of things and executive produce things. I just got so lucky with him. We were in class, outside of class one day, and he just came up to me. He's like, hey, you know, whatever you're doing, I'm down to do it.
Wow.
And it was like, you know, it's like a bad movie almost, but it was like,
holy shit.
Holy shit. And so we ended up being from the same part of Florida.
Yeah. What part is that?
Tampa.
Tampa. Okay, sure.
Yeah, I grew up in Tampa, and he did too, in the St. Pete area. And yeah, it's like since then, you know, this is probably six or 7 years before we even made Butt Boy. But we would just make online content, short films, whatever.
Right.
We were doing a lot of comedy-based stuff, just trying to get like a little bit of a following online. And cut to one of the comedy sketches that we did was Butt Boy. It was a little one-minute thing where the tone was there and everything was there. And then it's just conversations like we'll be out one night having a beer. It's like, how far could we take that?
Yeah.
Like, how far can we stretch it? And shout out to Ryan Cook, who I did Butt Boy with as well. He just said it to me one night. What if this was a feature?
Yes.
And
thank God.
Right away, it just all was there. Like the office, boom, 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 like lightning in a bottle moment.
Man, let's just show the trailer so people know what we're talking about. Because
okay,
right now,
cool.
All they're hearing, the people who haven't seen it, they're just hearing Butt Boy.
Right.
And they're like, what could this possibly be? So, yeah, roll the trailer.
So what do you do?
Detective.
You look like every detective ever.
Oh, yes? Ow.
He's got the greasy hair and the earring. Looks good. You look good.
What about you?
What
do you do?
I haven't seen this in a while.
So good. It's a great trailer.
Tragedy strikes Critica County today as law enforcement have yet to make any headway on the missing child that vanished from Kathman Park this morning.
So you're asking me to go off this theory you got about a white married male who happens to be a father living in the suburbs of Critica County, who also happens to be your AA sponsor, has been secretly running around, cramming objects, animals, and children up his ass. And he
there
somehow digests them, and he does this in sprees, almost in serial killer fashion. Is that about it?
Uh-huh.
Love this tagline.
Yes. Sometimes the only way out is in for people listening. For people listening, they just heard really good music. fucking insane.
There it is.
Okay.
Crazy.
So what? So this. So there's a way to do Butt Boy that's going to ruin it. You make it silly.
Right.
Wink at the camera.
Yeah. That's why I think a lot of people think it's that up front.
Oh, yeah. I think just because. What's the detective's, the actor's name?
Tyler Rice. It's like my favorite actor. He's my favorite actor.
So good.
Yeah.
So good. And so the joy when I'm watching this as it continues is I began to realize they are not going to blink. They're not going to wink at the camera.
No.
It is going to be a hard-boiled detective show.
Genre.
And it is the most insane form of murder. And
right.
and something about the fact that you all the way through manage to keep that tone, to me, makes it one of the funniest movies I've ever seen, man. It is brilliant.
I appreciate that, man, so much. You know, the whole time you're doing it, you don't know if that's going to work or not. Like, that was very nerve-wracking. Not that there was, like, too much at stake. We made that for $150,000.
Wow.
That whole thing.
How long did it take?
30 days.
30 days.
We like fought for schedule. We were like paying, you know, you learn all these tricks and trades doing indie films where you pay people under the table to get this, or it's like,
right,
we know that this place exists, so let's shoot there.
Yes.
So we did so much of that where we would just reach out and say, hey, you know, we had a decent Instagram following from our comedy stuff.
Right.
We'll shout out your laser tag company for people to come to give us deals. Like everything was dealt with under the table where you just sort of, you know, you do whatever you can to get it done. But
this psychological element, though, of making this kind of movie. I mean, I'm sure any movie that you're making, you're shitting your pants mm-hmm. the whole time. I can't imagine.
Yeah.
I was reading this book, and it's this director. He made a bunch of stuff, but never like became like Kubrick or something like that. But he made so much stuff. And he said, being a director is like you're the captain of a pirate ship. It's mm-hmm. a pirate ship. And there's so many different plates spinning at the same time.
People don't even realize how stressful it is. It's like the majority of the time I'm saying, why am I doing this?
Right.
Like, why? This is so stupid on every level. Just how difficult it is, how just unhealthy you feel mentally. It just takes a toll on you and it's so relentless. It doesn't stop. Yet the flip side of it, I guess it's because like the nice, beautiful moments outpower it, or just the power of movies outpower
right.
it. I don't know what it is, but it's very rarely enjoyable while you're doing it. You have moments, sure, where you laugh and you're whatever, but it's mostly just torment.
Well, because you're, okay, so you have, I mean, just, why am I saying this to you? You're the director, but.
No, it's actually nice to hear about because nobody ever talks about this. They don't know.
No, they don't. Well, I think because when we've seen directors in movies, what do we see? The director is sitting in this chair next to a fucking camera and goes, cut! Let's try one more time.
Mm-hmm. That's all we know.
That was great! And that's what they think the director is, kind of like a conductor or something.
Right.
And that's, you just wave the sticks around for whatever that's called to tell the orchestra what the tempo is and you're done.
Yeah.
But no, you're dealing with a variety of maniacs, the actors, like God knows, the psychology of actors.
Probably historically pretty unstable people. They can be, not all of them.
Unstable people. And I can remember Johnny went on the road with me right after Mermaid. And I could, that character was still in him.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Johnny, you.
It was a lot, I think, for him. It was a lot for, I also really tried to push him to do something different that he's ever done before. But also, I think he just got back from Fallout. An indie film schedule is so, that's the craziest part.
Right.
That's the craziest part. You're doing like five scenes a day sometimes if you have to.
Yes. And it's not the same.
It's not the same. And I think he just came from that and he was like, whoa, we're here now and now we have to go do this, 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 and that. And
right.
Like, I'm even realizing this is a crazy schedule. I forgot how crazy this was. And then he's like coming to terms with it. So just that alone, the exhaustion of that.
And so you have to contend not just with the various personalities of the actors. All you want is a great performance for them.
It's energy based. It's like energy, everyone's energy.
Right.
So Kubrick has one of my favorite quotes that's so true. The hardest part about directing is getting out of the car in the morning.
Wow.
And that is just so true to all of it. Because you have to compose yourself. You can be in the worst mood ever. You didn't sleep. There's just going to be a lot of people looking at you. And if you if you have the wrong kind of energy, that just carries through everything.
Yep.
Down to like if you say something wrong to you say something in the wrong way to a boom operator, that can be a trickle effect because he's going to act differently the rest of the day. And that's going to affect this guy over here.
Yep.
And the last thing you want to the actors are the most important in the sense they can't be – they're fragile.
Yeah.
They're fragile
people. They can't be disturbed. They can't look around and think, oh, no, is the movie failing? People seem really upset. What's going on here? And so there's that – element where you have to be almost like a Hannibal Lecter or something to and simultaneously an energy DJ.
Yeah.
Even though you – might have had a bad phone call, a shitty night. You've seen some footage that isn't good.
Is this going to work the whole time?
You don't know if it even is going to work. And so you have to do that. But also, you're dealing with budgets. Also, you're dealing with the omnipresent time factor, right? Mm-hmm. You got to get the fuck out of wherever you're at. You don't have much more time here. You got to go. And then SAG, you got to feed these motherfuckers.
Yeah.
And then all of that. Somehow you're juggling all of that while maintaining confidence.
I think confidence, that's where it gets tricky for me because I can come off as cold, I think, to some people. I really learned that on this last one to the point where I was working with like some veteran actors and I realized they were feeling that I'm cold.
Right.
But my coldness, it's like a resting bitch face. I'm just so overwhelmed. And I was like, I can't fake it and be bubbly. I'm not a bubbly person naturally anyways. And I'm just in the edit of the movie. So sometimes I'll get so laser focused on like, I'm doing this shot now, this here.
Yeah.
And sometimes actors need, rightfully so, they need a little bit more that I fall short on. So like every single thing that you do, you learn these lessons. You're like mental note, maybe switch that up, pay a little bit more attention to that. And you're trying to learn how to make it a better experience for other people. But you just have to keep going with it. And, it's all about finding balance. Energy is just the key thing to all of it.
Now, Mermaid, we'll show the trailer for that in a second. I got lucky enough to see it a couple days ago. And when you look at this trajectory that happened from Butt Boy to Mermaid, like when I showed Josh, because I showed him Butt Boy first, he's like, they had a bigger budget for that.
Yeah.
But you do see more than just the bigger budget. You see your evolution as a filmmaker. You see probably whatever you did learn from Butt Boy, you figured out how to like do it better. And then you see a lot of really famous actors, dude.
Yeah.
Kevin Nealon, what
really
the fuck?
Really lucky.
How do you get people like that involved?
Honestly, it was the script. Like this, I think people are really looking for interesting things to do. It was a little different for everyone. Like I think Robert Patrick was kind of like, what the hell is this?
Right.
Because he didn't know anything. You know, he doesn't really probably even fully know what I'm trying to do as a filmmaker. But I talked to him on the phone. Like if they're a little bit hesitant, I can talk to them on the phone. And I kind of let them know I'm not crazy.
Right.
I'm not a crazy person because what you just read probably seems a little bit crazy. And I think sometimes that's the case. But it's just reaching out to reps and you have – you know, you ask them if they want to do it. Will they read it? Blah, blah, blah. Some people say no. Some people say immediately yes. And it's great. This one was tricky. We were in the middle. The SAG went on strike. We're in the week one of casting.
Oh, fuck.
So this is our first hiccup. By the way, we had so many
Jesus
problems
with this Christ.
Movie.
That's a big hiccup.
We're in
man.
The middle of it. I've talked to two actors maybe. Johnny, we have, whatever. But we're like trying to figure out to cast the rest. We can't legally speak to any actors until now, a week before the movie starts.
What?
So we're casting this movie and we can't cast it until a week before we go shoot.
That puts you in a brutal position.
That was the first thing where it was like, so it was 4 months of my producers calling SAG and they're like, what are you saying? What? Like you're saying, and just screaming at them and not screaming, but being aggressive. Like,
yeah.
We need this agreement because you can get this agreement that...
I heard about that agreement.
Yeah, everyone was waiting for it.
Yeah.
And that's why it took so long. I'm sure they... I don't want to shit on SAG too hard.
Right.
But I'm sure they have their... there's a process and they can't give it to you up until... So we did rush it a little bit and I think it was about a week and a half. It was really a week and a half before, but still it's like, then you just get on the phone with these actors. It's like, all right, we'll see you there. Whatever.
Whoa.
So it's like, that's the first intense...
You got to book their travel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You got to get them in the hotel.
Not me personally, but.
But someone does. You had a week to fucking do that?
Yeah.
And all whatever. I can't even imagine what their requirements are and the things they're asking for. And then you've got to deal with all of that. I mean, that by itself is a nightmare.
It's always a nightmare.
So you got to fly a bunch of these actors out to Florida to shoot this insane.
In the hot sun.
In the hot sun.
Trying to convince them that it's going to work. And some actors know, some don't.
Okay, let's show the trailer just so people know what we're talking about. This is Mermaid, and it is incredible.
Did you know that the ocean is 71% of the Earth's surface? It is said that humans have only discovered around 5% of it, which leaves lots of room for imaginations to run free.
Doug, I gotta let you go, brother.
Why?
Straight up, you've gotten pretty weird, man.
People. What happened, Doug?
We gotta make a decision right now, okay?
Strange little man. Doug, you need some help.
Doug, go. Doug, weirdo.
Doug. Why can't
you stay? Because Daddy's gotta go save a fucking mermaid.
Fuck.
There you go.
Oh. There she is.
The Weekend at Bernie's scene.
Yeah. Oh my God, that is what that was. Oh shit, I didn't catch that. I really feel like I don't want to mess up too much about this movie because it is so. It's so much. I was expecting. Which it is.
I'm curious about this. I'm curious of what you thought in expecting it.
Okay. I'm expecting a dark horror comedy.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I went in there expecting. What I got was one of the best movies about grief that I've ever seen in my fucking life, man.
Wow.
And so that is a left hook, which is I came in there completely not ready to tear up.
How did that feel to you? Were you a little bit like...
Oh, I loved it.
You loved it.
Well, the rug got pulled out. You know, it's like, oh, wow. That's when I... And again, I'm having to separate, like, I know you, I know Johnny. So I'm trying to, like, separate...
Yeah, that's weird, right?
That, not in the sense of watching it, from like, oh, this is going to get awards. Like, this is going to ripple. This is going to make some ripples. But
make
I'm
a
like...
splash, if you will. We keep joking about that. It's either going to be Mermaid Sinks or Mermaid Makes a Splash.
Oh, it's going to make a splash. I mean, to me, it's going to make a splash because of this left hook, which I feel bad about talking about.
No, you can talk about that. Everyone who's writing about it is talking about that gets it and likes it. And it is that to me. So that's why I thought this would be an interesting way to do it. Because that horror angle that you're talking about, I think that could have been easily a thing where it's more based in genre, but... Yeah, I don't know. This is kind of like a part of me. Emotions like this are a part of me. It's not even a personal connection or anything like that. I have this certain emotional feeling towards Florida. And
yeah.
I've had friends that, I guess the best way to put it is, if I were to see Florida as like a picture of my life,
yeah,
there's certain colors in it. There's certain things that represent different things to me. And it's a feeling almost.
Sure.
And I wanted this to be a more emotional sort of thing.
Oh my God. Like it really was. I mean, it is a horror movie. And the makeup for the mermaid.
See, I don't even like horror for it. People are saying that. I don't like, there's horror elements in it, but I wouldn't put that first. Like I would almost call it like a thriller adventure movie or comedy insert genre, whatever that genre is after it. But I would start with dark comedy. Mixed with whatever.
Listen, what many comedians fail at doing, and I'm certainly have failed in my attempts to do this in the past, on stage, if you can do the thing where not only do you make people laugh, but somehow you weave in there something kind of poignant.
That's my favorite too.
It's almost impossible to do. You're probably just going to come off as didactic, or you're going to come off as like sanctimonious. You're going to come off as puffed up on stage. But if you can do it,
right,
then if you can bring those two polarities together, it's a very powerful experience. When I saw Carlin, he could do that.
Yeah, he did that.
And it was a crazy thing to be in an audience where people who thought they were coming for a comedy show are suddenly getting this like existential deconstruction of reality that is like blowing their minds. And you did that with this. And I
thank you so much for saying that. I mean, that's what I want. That's what I wanted to try and do.
You did it. You did it, man.
I hope so. I hope so.
I'm sitting there like, fuck, I gotta go back. I gotta go to therapy. I haven't dealt with my grief. I've got to fucking go to therapy. This is getting in the way of, because one, you know, his relationship with his daughter and his baby mama. And to me, I've never seen a better symbol for when you are carrying that darkness inside of you and you feel like a freak and you feel completely disconnected from the normie world. What a great symbol, which is wheeling a drugged, fucking, scary-looking mermaid.
Right. Yeah.
Into a kid's party.
Yeah.
That's your grief. That's your shadow. You think you can hide that shit by putting glasses on it? And then, of course, the old saying, "Lipstick on a fish." It's like, dude, you've got to deal with this. You can't haul it around some stinky, fishy, puking mermaid.
Exactly.
Oh man.
Well, I'm glad it hit that way with you. I mean, you nailed it. That's it. That's what I wanted it to be. And I also wanted it, you know, Butt Boy had like this weird culty, it did way more for me than I thought. It's opened a lot of different doors for me and just on it in its own right. But then you do feel like, you know, nobody wants to be too tight in a box. And I wanted to have elements of what I did there, but also show it could be a little bit more on the writing side and a little bit more in different areas of it, down to the look of it and all of that stuff. So I was thinking about that while I was trying to write it. It's like, how can I do some? I don't want to do the same exact thing where, you know, it's a genre story with a ridiculous thing. It's like, how can I get a little bit more? Because then you're thinking about the one after this where it's like, well, now I have to get to this.
Oh, my God.
And they're not going to let me get to that if I just keep making these very tight genre things, or you know,
right? Yeah, I see how you wouldn't want to like be redundant, and which you weren't at all. And there wasn't even. It's a completely different
thing
altogether. And you know, you pick great actors. Every actor in there killed it.
I know they did.
Kurt
great.
Fox was so fucking good.
Amazing.
Johnny obviously carried the movie. Yeah. He like, whoa. So you had that going for you, but I got to ask you, and you know, just tell me that's not what you meant. Because one of the things, when I made The Midnight Gospel, people would say, is this what it's about? And I would think, no, not to me.
Right.
But who knows?
Right.
But I'm thinking, like, the ocean as the subconscious?
I'm already going to say no to that for me. I just don't think of it. I can sense when I actually like that though, because now I'm thinking about that, and now I'm like, maybe I'll have you keep going with that in a second. But I can sense with things that I want people to find those things in it, because I think that's really cool. And I might have it here and there for, you know, whatever it is. But I think when you write stuff in genre, and then you bring in this human element to it, it's naturally these things are gonna happen, and that's kind of the coolest part about writing something.
Yeah.
Compared to the finished product, because then you see, you're like, wow, that could be that, that could be that. I mean, even in Butt Boy, people would review it and they were breaking down, like, they would go really into depth about things.
Oh, that's cool.
And I'm just like, all right, well, that's crazy. And that's kind of the best. That's truly the best part of it to me.
Oh, so. I love that. Well, it's kind of like, you know, these archetypes, they're invisible until you throw paint on them, and then suddenly they're going to emerge whether you intended them to or not. They're going to wear the clothes of whatever you make. And because you know, the consideration of, in terms of grief, which is such a bizarre thing to go through.
Mm-hmm.
I have to ask, you mentioned your friend.
Yeah.
And is that what informed
that was just there in the background? I mean, I was already doing this movie, and then I was already writing this movie, and my friend passed away. That was from Florida, passed away from pills. And then we had another very close friend who was a very much like a Florida man. Both great guys, really highly intelligent people, funny. But I think the world was a little bit too big for them, and it always sort of, they just couldn't handle it.
Right.
Since we were kids, you know? And I hadn't talked to, really, I haven't seen them in years. It had been 15 years that we went down different roads in life, but we would talk to each other and whatever. And yeah, so one passed away, and then I saw the other one when we were location scouting down in Florida. And I started to think, like, okay, this is coming into the story a little bit more as it's happening. I meet up with this other friend. We go out and watch live music and get drinks, and he's just, they were very close. We were all very close, but they were very, very, very close. And he died a month after I saw him from the same thing.
Oh, my God.
And it was almost because of the grief of the other.
Yeah.
So, you know, this isn't like an on-the-nose. It's not an on-the-nose, you know, it's not about that in the movie. It's just, again, if I look at it like a painting, it's 100% in there.
Yeah.
Of just more so of their mindset of how they saw the world and how, you know, just being an outcast to things. And that's how I remember them anyways. Again, time had passed. But so I think that's in there. And that's like very Florida to me. It's in that painting I'm talking about. It's those guys are in there. And like that feeling is in there. So,
well, I mean, that's the crazy thing about Florida. And I think you could argue LA is that here you have this like beautiful place, the ocean, the beach, people out there on fucking boats.
Mm-hmm.
You go and visit as a tourist, and it would be easy to think, man, I gotta live here. Like this is it. And then you get into a place and suddenly you realize that underneath all that beauty,
there's the underbelly.
And it's a dark fucking underbelly
in
Florida.
And I see it as very dark because to some people it's not. And you can have a great suburban, you know, I grew up in a great house in Florida. My family is the greatest family ever.
Yeah.
Great childhood. But I had this awareness of like when we would go to the beach and we would see these people, I was just so fascinated by like, you know, that it wasn't in a movie. How is this not in a movie that these people talk like this? And just everything that they do. And there's humor to it. I think it's all so funny. It's ridiculous. You know, these beach people, you know, it's just ridiculous. And they genuinely talk like this. And
yes, I know. I mean, well, you know, I can remember the first time I realized the song, the Jimmy Buffett song, Margaritaville,
dude,
is like Elliott Smith level depressing.
Yeah.
When you look at the lyrics of that, but he pulls off. Like, here's this. Most people, when they're singing Wasting Away Again in Margaritaville, they don't realize
it's a
dude. What does he say? Like, he stepped on a fucking bottle cap, he cuts his foot.
Yeah,
he's just like
going through a rough time. By the way, that song, while we're there in the hotel the whole time, 12 times a day. So, in your psychosis, you're waking up, you hear it faint from the local guy downstairs with the guitar. Sipping on sponge cake. It's like you're in a bat. You're in a Groundhog's Day.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Well, that's the anthem of the people have confused this song of like late stage alcoholism, unresolved grief, heartbreak, and most importantly, not taking personal responsibility for your fucked up life and some dumb epiphany at the end that just maybe I got myself in this position.
Exactly.
They think of that as the song of a vacation. And that's the trick of any of these beautiful places. Hawaii, too. Man, you go to the tourist areas of Hawaii, and, well, obviously the fires really underlined it because you're driving to whatever your nice spot is, and you're passing the desiccated ruins of houses where God knows how many people fucking died. But even before that, you go to the grocery store in Hawaii. You go to the grocery store in Hawaii, and suddenly you see a different thing. You see all the people who thought they'd move to fucking Hawaii and it's just going to be every day. It's a vacation. Realizing, no. Now you're just in the middle of the ocean, trapped in a small town where there's not enough resources and shit's too expensive. And Florida, you can just see that. Like, it's like it lures you in.
Mm-hmm.
Venus flytrap style. You get there.
It takes about 2 days in Florida, I think, though. You just have to be there for 2 days and then you start to feel it.
Like,
Jimmy Buffett, one more thing on Jimmy Buffett, because I wanted to get him, I wanted to have, you know, when you start writing a screenplay and then you realize how little money you have, I wanted Margaritaville to be the theme of this movie.
Oh, fuck, that would have been great.
I thought it would be so good at the end when they're having the stare down to bring that back. Like if you have it in the beginning and the end,
God.
It would have just been iconic, you know? Jimmy Buffett had just passed away 2 days before we started shooting. So when I say they were playing it everywhere, it was unbelievable how often you would hear that song. It was like end of the shoot, there was one point where I just wanted to break down and cry. It's like the song was the last thread for me that was going to set me over the edge.
Dude, and it would drive me crazy too.
It's bad. It's kind of a great song.
It's a great song, but not a million times in a row when you're like dying in the sun trying to make a movie.
Yeah.
I mean, this, by the way, mentioning music, mm-hmm. I remember like at the beginning, you know, in the credits, I believe I thought, oh, it's weird. The person making the music and you have the same name.
Same exact name.
Yeah. Yeah. But honestly, that's how dumb. I just was like, whoa, that's a weird coincidence. Because when you see how good this is, did you do the music for Butt Boy too?
I did, yeah.
So
I did it with Ryan Cook, who helped me with the screenplay as well. We wrote the screenplay together and we did the music together too.
So when Aaron and I, my wife and I, as we're like talking about how fucking good the movie was, we're just like, wait. How did he have the time?
That's nice.
How did you have the time? I don't understand, but I know I really don't understand.
For me, it's part of writing for me now. I kind of discovered it on Butt Boy, but writing's really, really hard, it's hard for everyone.
Yeah.
That's another thing that needs to be talked about more. Screenwriting is really
horrible.
Really, very difficult. So when I get sick of writing, when I get sick of a scene, I'm thinking about directing. Directing's, it's more fun to me, and it's like, you know, it's the emotionality of it and all of that stuff. So it's just a nice thing when I get sick of writing, I can sit down. I just sit down at a computer on Logic, and I just come up with music that sort of just feels the way I'm seeing the movie, and it feels the way the movie. And then it's like, this might not make it, this might make it.
Oh,
but
that's
like,
cool.
This sounds mermaidy. This sounds kind of horror-y. This sounds whatever, emotional. And whatever, you just kind of, you know, it's really nice for me. It sounds like, I hate bringing it up, and that's why even with the credits too, it almost feels like annoying. It's like, oh, the music as well. But it's so beautiful to me in a way because it's therapeutic. It's
yeah,
like,
I get it.
I've had a complicated relationship with music my entire life. I was a musician first, and I realized it's not a road I wanted to go down with things. And now it's become what music should be for people. For me, where it's like this escape where
yes,
I can just sit and, you know, it's like a painter. You just get to sit in peace and
yes,
come up with this stuff. So.
Oh, boy, doesn't it make you just like when I love making music too. And I anytime you're getting into it, the thought pops into your head of how lucky professional musicians are,
yeah,
because this is all they do all day long. They don't have to go back to writing the script, they don't have to go direct something, they don't have to, they just
by themselves
they just sit and but this isn't like the director was a little big-headed, thought of himself as a genius and decided to do the soundtrack for his movie. This is like when you see at the end like, oh shit, no, that is him. He fucking made the sound. It's real good.
Thank you very much.
Real good, man.
I appreciate that, man.
So you must have started real young making music.
I guess around like 14. I was just in bands growing up. I love recording music. I love writing. Yeah. I like songwriting. And
me too.
Just recording and being in the studio. Performing, I think I convinced myself that I like it when I was young, and I just could never, I just would freak out. I get nervous and I don't want to be up there.
What about acting in your own movie though? Like in Butt Boy, like I've always been fascinated by that dynamic of somehow simultaneously directing a movie and acting mm-hmm. in it. What are the challenges there?
There's a lot. I mean, I don't have that bug to act. Butt Boy was honestly just, people weren't lining up to play that role. You know what I mean? it's a tough casting call. It's like no one wanted to play that. So, and I was like, I could do it. I can only do like two things as an actor. I can do a monotone guy and do
right.
a, a deadpan face. And that's what the character was. So it's like, you know, whatever. But it was, it did take away from things on the directing side, I think.
Right.
It just will, no matter what. It's too much.
Well, who do you have to check in with? You know, like you know, if it, an actor can at least get some sense.
Yeah,
is this
exactly.
what you were looking
yeah,
for?
Yeah, we got it. That was always weird. So, I'm like, I guess I got it.
Yeah. We did it.
Yeah.
I'm curious about your thoughts on AI right now.
Mm-hmm.
It, like anytime I have an idea for anything, I don't use it for creativity. It's garbage so far. I mean, I maybe at some point I'll be able to like actually come up with non-cheesy, stupid ideas.
Yeah.
But as far as organizing ideas or like organizing a screenplay, which to me seems like haiku, like it's so technical and mm-hmm. it's so
exhausting.
Mm-hmm. Have you worked with AI at all to
I think I've used it with imagery stuff for ideas, you know, just the apps. It's like create a, you know, you can get very specific with it and it's crazy, you know, like a 15 millimeter lens of a mermaid that's whatever, to get ideas of like maybe we could use this, maybe we could use that. I think the art form of it right now is the artist that knows how to word something.
Right.
And I wouldn't even call that art. I don't
prompt
know.
Engineering.
Yeah, yeah, whatever that is.
Yeah.
People are just really good at that. And I've seen things that, you know, it depresses me. It excites me too, though, because then I'm like, how can you use it in a subtle way?
You what know, depresses you?
Just that movies, I don't know. Very quickly, there's going to be movies that are just fully AI. And I'm like, you're not making a movie if you're doing that. But
well, because you're like, when I went, I'm sorry, everybody, I talk about AI too much.
No, it's we all are now.
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
And I went through the phase of like using Midjourney and like the initial amazement, or using one of the many video apps out there for it, and going through that initial phase of like, oh my God, this is incredible.
Crazy.
Oh my God, I can, maybe I can make my own cartoon now, or
mm-hmm.
oh my God. And then I started getting weirdly resentful of it, because I realized that learning curve that maybe I could confront in drawing or animating, it was robbing me of that. It was ripping my teeth out.
Well, it's actually not it. It's not the thing.
Like
the joy, the best part about making a movie, as much as I was bitching and complaining about it earlier, it is making the thing.
Yeah.
As torturous as it is and everything, it's like, that's why you do it.
Yes.
It's not about anything else to me. Production is the best part. And because you're physically doing it. And when you're there and an actor's acting and you're in, you can look through the scope and it's like your little world. You know, everything you thought of is right in this thing.
Yeah.
That's the greatest feeling in the world.
That's it.
AI is the opposite of that. But I just saw a video. I don't know if you'd be able to find it, but I guess what would you type in? It was like a muscle car 70s chase scene from a movie that was AI. Let me see if it.
See if we can
find it. I'll know it if I see it on the. This is what made me really depressed, but also. Is it that first? No, that's not it.
Cinematic car chase, yeah, Unreal Cinemas.
What was that one?
Unreal Engine 8. Now that's a year ago.
No, that's not it. That's probably too vague of a description. I think I saw it on Instagram or something, but
wait, scroll up a little bit. Let's look at this dystopian shit. Go up one more. Meet AI life coaches. Are you fucking kidding me? Will you open that up, Josh? I just got to see what this is.
I know they're doing all these therapist ones now.
We're looking at soulmachines.com. Wait, click talk to Vesper. Oh, you have
to sign
up
to chat. $11.99 a month.
From choosing your destination to decoding the cultural do's and don'ts, I'm here to help.
And you just asked me why it's depressing. Like, this kills me. This kills me.
Dude.
But I do think that it could be cool for movies to say, you know, movies, inevitably it's going to happen. This is happening very fast.
Sure, of course.
We have no choice, right?
Right.
I think with movies it could be interesting if there was, you know, you should have to have a decal. There was no AI using this movie. And that could become this flip thing for humanity where it's like, you know, that's not AI.
No, I think it's going to add value to non-AI stuff. And the over, like, God help me. If I post something that I made with AI because I'm in a hurry to make a comedy flyer,
mm-hmm.
dude.
That's where it's great, though.
The rage
yeah.
from the internet is just like, you fucking piece of shit. Why don't you just go and find an artist and punch him in the fucking face, you piece of
for
shit.
For a flyer for a show.
It's yeah. like, dude, this. If I paid someone to paint a little boy floating away on a balloon like this looks, it would take 3 months and it would probably cost at least $30,000
yeah.
for my show in Spokane. Give me a break. But you know, man, I'll tell you, I think there's something so soulless and dead in it.
I think people who appreciate the arts anyways, I think they all feel that. So that's good. I don't want the studio system to, you know, it's already happening, but we'll see where they can take it. I don't know.
Well, yeah, it's happening. I just read this article that Netflix used upscaling AI to upscale some sitcom from the 80s. It's on vice.com if y'all want to look it up. But essentially, they're saying it's the creepiest shit you've ever seen because, like, it's turned everyone in the sitcom into, like, high-res monsters and shit in the background doesn't look right and everything's just off and fucked up. And they just did it for who knows why.
The flip side of it in a cool sense to me would be, like, as a kid – if I was a prompter, like we're saying, that's not an artist, but as a kid, being the capability to make a movie that looks like Michael Mann's Heat from your bedroom yeah. as a 13-year-old and you have a screenplay, like that just is cool.
That's
but
cool.
I don't think it should be called a movie. I think it should be called an AI
okay.
cinematic experience.
But
or
there
something.
You are. There we are. You know, this is the thing. I can remember when I first started working at the Comedy Store, wasn't even a comic yet. And I'd watch the old comics, look at the new comics.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember standing next to an old comic from the 80s, watching a new comic on stage. The old comic from the 80s, he's dressed like Dracula, because that's what he does. He gets on stage and does stand-up as Dracula. And he's looking up there at some kid, I don't know, they're cursing. You're not supposed to curse. You know, you're supposed to do clean comedy. And he really has the saddest look on his face, and he just kind of mutters, that's not. And I realized, oh my God, this is every generation looks at the new thing. And it's like, that ain't it. And I think with AI, I feel the same way, but it's sad. This is what I think is so interesting about it. It's art.
Yeah.
It is art.
Okay.
Is it soulless? Do I look at AI art now and it gives me like a feeling of like 4 hours into a boring car ride with my grandparents? Yeah. It feels like shit looking at it. I don't care about it.
Yeah.
If I see a Instagram short, which I'm guilty of putting out in the beginning because I was so excited. Look what I did with AI. I'm like, I don't want to look at it. I don't care. But man, it's coming.
It's coming. It's already here. And all that stuff's going to look way better very quickly.
Indistinguishable.
And it's just, yeah, I it's complicated, but it's not. And I do sound a little bit like the old man, but that's just because I've been through the trenches a bit in the indie film world. And it's like,
yeah,
they just get to sit in their bed now making it's going to look better than the thing I was shooting at 21.
I think it's going to be a guru level experience for young creatives, because what is actually going to happen is they're going to get bored and they're not going to want to do it. And the people who aren't getting bored are idiots. And I think they're going to intuit somewhere along the way,
mm-hmm.
just what you're saying. And they're going to realize, oh, this, because what they're missing is chaos. You know, they might get the AI might spit out some bullshit.
Yeah.
But I mean, like the chaos you experience
yeah.
making Mermaid. I mean, those moments.
Frayed edges are important in things.
Absolutely.
And it's my favorite kind of thing. It's like, it's with music, with everything. The imperfections is what makes it special.
Absolutely.
And I think you can feel that. Sometimes you can't even put your finger on what it is. But I think it's important, you know, like a photograph with, you know, a perfect photograph. I'd rather a photograph with wrinkles in it. I wonder where that photograph came from more than
right.
Just a freshly printed one that
yeah.
might look better, you know?
See, AI, it doesn't get that.
No.
It doesn't capture that. It can't capture that. It will never capture that.
Unless you just
that.
Put frayed edges, make this look a little
can
more
can you loose. Make this
you
look
some flaws.
Poignant and yeah. flawed? Like, I don't know, we had a rough day and we had to like compensate for like not yeah. having this location.
The boom operator got sick at 12 p.m. How would yeah. this sound now?
Yeah. yeah, it'll spit out some bullshit.
That's like a year away.
Yeah. I don't, it's probably now, but you're never going to, I in the beginning I thought, yeah, we'll get there, but I don't think we're going to get there. And really what AI did for me is it inspired me to start learning how to draw, because I got so annoyed with it trying to prompt it to do something. I'm like, I'd rather have my shitty drawings on my flyer than some perfected bullshit.
Yeah.
But I want to ask you something non-related to AI. And if you can't talk about it, okay. During the Q&A, there was a question that came up. Something happened or something with an actor, and you're like, I can't.
Yeah, I can talk about it. I'm not going to say who it is, but I can find a way to get around it. We had, well, in this movie, I was trying to cast people from the 90s that I really admire. And I think I did that in a lot of ways. There was a lot of people in it that worked out, and it was great. We just had a nightmare. We had a nightmare actor that we signed on to be somebody at the end of the movie. And
oh, my God.
It was like, you know, I had a great dinner with him before we started shooting.
Yep.
Got along great.
Yeah.
He was very complimentary about the writing and
great.
Just giving me, it was a dream come true. And yes. I had a lot of these dinners while making the movie. It was so incredible to, you know.
Yeah, how cool.
Yeah. But he was really great. We had a call time the next day at, I mean, if I slow down a little bit, it's just me trying not to say his name. But
if you do, we'll cut it out.
Okay.
For real.
There we go.
For real.
Okay. Yeah, that's me letting you know. There you go.
You haven't said his name yet. If he says the name, mark it down for sure.
When we left, there was a little bit of a red flag. As on our way out, there was a little bit of a red flag. That's not even specific. I'll keep it within the movie. We had to get up at 4 a.m. the next day, very early, to go out on a boat.
Right.
In the middle of the ocean. Originally, it was supposed to be out at sea for that end. So it was like choppy waters. We're there at 4. I'm not in the car when this happens, but, you know, it's early. Nobody wants to be there. Everyone's a little bit groggy.
Yeah.
The hotel we had dinner at the night previously, they pass it. It's still dark out. It's a big, famous hotel there. He goes, you know, he says something like, you know, Al Capone used to own that place.
Mm, great.
And, you know, Johnny is a man of facts.
Yeah.
He likes facts.
Yeah.
But he didn't say anything. He had the wherewithal to not say anything until just a light joke, which I thought was so funny. But they passed the sushi place down the road. And, you know, Johnny goes, you know, Al Capone used to eat sushi there.
Oh, no.
And this old school actor that was like, they had just met. And he loses it in front of all the actors in the Suburban. So now at 4 a.m., I show up, and the producer who was in the car, one of them comes up to me. He's like, that was not a good car ride. And I was like, what? I don't even know exactly what happened there, but
he
pulls me aside. And then as he's telling me, this actor just screams out my name, Tyler, get over here.
Oh, my God.
So I start walking with him, and he's like, who the fuck? Or like, what the fuck is this? What the fuck? And I don't even know what he's talking about because the producer didn't even fully tell me what had happened. But I got the gist of what happened. And the other actors were coming up to me and everyone was telling me. So,
oh my God.
We go on the boat now. It's for, he can't let this go. His energy, he just can't let it go. And it's carrying over. I think it's just being in the morning. We're all sipping coffee and we're going out into the ocean and it's rocky water. And it's just like, doesn't feel great. He starts to do some, you know, he starts to get a little bit rude to everyone. I'll say it broadly like that, which is fine, by the way. In my mind, it's not cool.
Right.
I don't like it.
Right.
But if you can show up and do your job, there is something almost romantic to me about.
Sure.
Especially a certain type of actor who does it. It's like, oh, that was kind of cool.
Yeah. You know,
whatever.
Sure.
I can appreciate it.
Right.
So I thought it was that, at least at first.
It might be his style. You know, he's famous. He's kind of gracing you with his presence. He's walking around being a little bit of a dick.
Yeah,
old school Hollywood is
here. And you're kind of like, of course he is.
Yeah. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
Sure.
He's him. You know?
Yeah.
So long or short of it is, throughout the day, he just...
Sylvester Stallone.
No. You're okay. Not. Well, same breed.
Okay.
Yeah. So we start to shoot the scene. Some other stuff happened in between, but I won't get into it because it's too detailed. But the point is he couldn't do his job, and he couldn't say his
lines. Al Pacino.
No. That would have been awesome, though. he couldn't do it.
He couldn't do his lines.
Couldn't do his lines.
Because he was so flustered about a fucking Al Capone joke?
He was flustered. Well, that carried over into, I think, just the boat, the earliness, the everything.
Wow.
And then he was starting to feel, he told me some things before we started shooting. He's like, just so you let you know, I'm not going to say this thing.
Again, oh, great.
I can brush that off as like the actor thing we were just talking about. Like, okay, why aren't you going to say it? He's like, well, I just wouldn't. And I'm like, you don't know that much about this character. And that's where it gets annoying sometimes, where you're like, I've worked on this for fucking 2 years. You've been here for 10 minutes. And okay. The other thing was, he wanted to change the blocking, which I had storyboarded, and we had creatures.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, he wanted to change the blocking. He's like, I wouldn't sit for this. I have to stand. Classic old actor thing to say. I gotta move. And I'm like, you know, me and my editor, cinematographer, we planned for this day. We're out at sea. It's like, we have shots. You know, some people are a little bit more fluid, and I am too sometimes, but not on a boat when it's the finale of the film and it's about stillness, you know? And
that scene was so fucking good.
I love that scene. It's my favorite one.
Gut-wrenchingly grotesque, by the way.
Yeah.
But okay.
Funny though, too, right?
So, in thinking of that scene and thinking that asshole said he needed to walk around,
he had to walk. So that was the first thing he came to me with before all this. He's like, I gotta walk. And I was still like, all right, let me think about this. Genuinely, I'm not gonna be an asshole.
Sure.
Sometimes these ideas are great.
Right.
And you're like, oh, that could be really cool.
Yeah.
I kind of figure out a way to do it. I'm like, okay, this could be interesting. Let's do it. But then he starts to flub his lines, right? So now we're back to him flubbing his lines.
Oh no.
Everyone feels it. He feels everyone feeling
it.
Just bombing. It's not good.
Because if you're going to be a dick, you better be good.
Exactly.
You've been a dick and now you're eating shit.
And I would love it if they were a dick and they were good. It's like,
right.
This story, I actually wouldn't tell it then. But this guy kind of pissed all over my movie, so I don't care.
Yeah, he definitely did.
And we don't have a lot of money. It's like, what are you doing?
I mean, I can't even, was it the same boat? Did you use the same boat?
Yeah, same boat.
So that ain't cheap.
It's not cheap. And we took it out. So this is like fuel costs, and like he just pissed all over a bunch of money. So I'm kind of like, fuck that guy.
Like, I can't imagine.
I love him. I love him as an actor. I love him in everything he's in, but whatever.
So what happened?
He starts to do the lines, and my first AD whispers something in my ear. He's like, you know, what are we going to do here? And he kind of feels that happened. And then it starts to get bad. Then he goes inside, and I'm just like, hey, why don't you just go look it over again? Just go look it over.
Yeah.
Like, let's just, you know, I'm trying to be cordial about it because I'm already walking on eggshells. And I go inside. I'm like, I'm going to have to just, like, read it to him. And he's going to have – we didn't have an earwig or anything. I'm just going to have to just say it because I need it. Maybe there's a it was so unsalvageable. It's like maybe there's a version of this movie where I can just, like, cut to him for a line.
Cut
to Johnny.
Right.
There's no subtext
there
going on.
There could be some hope still.
I have to do something.
Yeah.
So I go in and I tell him, and then he's weirdly like super nice to me all of a sudden. He's like, yeah, man, whatever you want. And now I'm just like, oh, that's even worse and scarier. So we go out and I start to read him the monologue, and then he can't repeat what I'm saying. So I'll say a line and he can't repeat it.
What?
And so it just gets to this, okay, so you're just, this isn't going
to
work.
Was he
at
trying
all.
To sabotage her? Was he just so...
I think at that point, yeah.
He just wanted to, he was just like, I'm going to fuck this guy.
Yeah. I don't know what he thought. I don't know what he thought, but it felt like that. It felt like not good. So anyways, we get to now it's the part where he has to stand, and I've changed the blocking for it. And it just ends in a catastrophe where I just tell him to change his eye line a little bit. He freaks out on me. That sets him over the edge.
What do you mean freak out? What did he say? What did he
do? Starts screaming at me. He's like, I think I made more fucking movies than you, man. And like just goes off. And
wow.
This is after me changing the blocking. And like, of course, simultaneously, never got seasick this whole movie. All of a sudden, as this is happening, everyone starts to get a little bit like Bobby. And we're like, all right, this is fucking crazy. And I have all this on film too of him yelling at me. So, anyways, it went on and on. There's so much. I know that sounds like there's a lot of detail in that, but there's so much more. And long of the short of it was, we ended up just having to let him go. I do wish him well, but also like
that's not.
You
I mean,
shouldn't do that.
And so you're getting screamed at by this
surreal.
So also everyone who loves you, who you work with, probably wants to kill him.
They, yeah.
And so you've got a group of people who just want to kill him, and then you probably want to kill him. So why do you respond to that? How do you deal with that level of aggression that you've read about, heard about, but there it is in front of you for what sounds to me no reason at all?
It got so incoherent and sort of crazy that it was easy to laugh at. The thing that sucked about it was logistically, what are we going to do?
Right.
Because we don't have this scene.
Yeah.
You know, it just remained about the movie. We were supposed to work with him the next day. He had like two lines. We were supposed to work with him. And then he ended up not, or I ended up just being like, I can't do this.
Yeah, of course.
This is awful.
Yeah.
And it's just like, we don't have it to begin with. So why are we going to put ourselves through it? Like, once we realized we have to replace him, which we did, and I think it was the coolest move ever in the movie.
This is what AI will not replace.
Yes.
Because you see divine moments like that, where in the moment you're dealing with I think you must be some kind of enlightened being, because like, if it were me, and this is like my baby,
mm-hmm.
and you have gone into the most vulnerable creative place,
and you've been there for a while too.
And you're a terrorist. You're blowing up my movie in front of people I've been working with, and you suck.
I have no patience for that either, because it's just so, your emotions are so raw and you're so exhausted.
And you're seasick.
And you're seasick, and you're just like, dude, you know, go fuck yourself. And it's a really weird when it's like a hero of yours who I admire so much,
right.
and I love everything that he's in, but you know, he's just not. It's not the same, whatever it is. I don't know what was going on with him. It's none of my business. I don't even give a fuck what it is. But it was sad more than anything.
And you're trapped on a boat.
Yeah.
It's not even like he can storm off.
No.
So you're stuck at sea with this motherfucker.
We're just like swaying, and he's like, you know.
And then.
Kind of cool, but.
No, I mean, it's a story.
If money wasn't being blown, it's kind of cool.
It's a story. It's incredible. But then you realize when you got the scene that you got, that whatever the gods of creativity are, God maybe, they were just like, no, I'm going to make your movie better.
Yeah,
and
I think so.
And suddenly you have this pristine, beautiful, incredible, epic.
A little more real.
Oh, yeah.
More human.
Who was that actor, by the way?
Kevin Dunn. He's one of my favorite
Kevin
actors.
Dunn.
You ever watch Veep, the show Veep?
Yes.
He's the guy with the big mug in Veep.
Okay.
But he's been in everything.
He killed it. He just slam dunked it. And thank God that guy had a nervous breakdown.
Yeah, and shout out to him. He had 24 hours to learn that giant monologue, which is not easy, and understand the context of everything that's going on. And he was the opposite in the sense that we talked for 5 minutes, and he's like, I think I'm going to do this. I'm like, that sounds great. Sat down, you know, the opposite. Like Robert Patrick's the same way. It's like,
whoa,
you just knock it out. And it was so cool. That's like the best part ever, you know?
That's got to be another cool part about directing, is getting to witness what is basically magic, that somebody in 24 hours could somehow bring that level of emotional depth and that level that like somehow just.
It's the best part of it. It's the best part of the whole thing. When you write, it's truly, you know, if you're a writer director.
Yeah.
When the two come together in this moment and you're like, this was just a thing in my head. And the weirder it is, the more surreal it is almost, because you're like, we're here and he's saying these words right now that are just like, it's incredible.
Oh, you want me to just, you know, take that character in your mind and not just like bring it to life, but I'm going to make it so good that you could do a spinoff just about me. I'm just going to do that. No problem. 24 hours. Yeah, sure. I'll just bring an epic, legendary being to life. And I'll just do it. No problem. What's the big deal? That's magic.
That's truly how it feels with them.
Yeah.
Like Robert is an absolutely, every actor in this movie I'm obsessed with, from, you know, Tyler Rice, the wife who plays Tina, Julia Larson.
She was great.
Isn't she so good?
Both of them. Tyler Rice is so good.
Guys.
I felt bad for him having to act in a fucking neck brace.
They're like my favorite actor. They're like some of my favorite actors. And they're so... they get so into the work, like at the same level I do almost with the directing, where it just becomes this like amazing collaboration.
Yeah.
It's like, I couldn't even know this exists in a way. And it's like, anyways, I'm thinking about like doing a small thing with them because I love them so much. But anyways, Robert, he's such a veteran to the point where my favorite part about, this is a great memory, but I would drive by the hotel every night and he would sort of fuck with me on set, like especially the first day. He walked in, he's like, what's my character's name again? What am I doing? And there's so many people here. And this is before the other story happened. So I was just like, oh, fuck, is this whole thing going to just fucking burn? We start rolling, and he's just like word perfect.
Oh, that's great.
Amazing. And then you realize his whole thing is just fucking with people the entire time. And then you're like, you fall in love with the guy.
Yes.
But my favorite thing was I would drive by the hotel at night, and he's a sober guy. He's been sober for a while. So disciplined. So talented. It's just so organic and great. I think he should be in every Quentin Tarantino movie.
Absolutely.
He just belongs in that world to me. But he would just be outside in the hotel with a cigar, just digging through my script for hours out there.
That's
just
they
learning
love it.
They love it. And I just love that he was doing that. And it just so shows. And like I shot on anamorphic lenses. And, you know, we had one. I'm just thinking of another example off the top of my head. But
what's an anamorphic lens?
Anamorphic lens, it's just what gives you the wider scope. It's just what makes it look like the black bars. Just think of it that way.
Gotcha.
The organic black bars is within the lens. He's like, are these anamorphic lenses? You know, I'm over his shoulder. I'm like, yeah. He's like, what's on there, buddy? I'm like, 50. And he just goes, like, moves like that. And I'm just
dude,
like,
that's
dude,
so cool.
You've been doing this for so fucking long.
Wow.
And you've seen so much. And like, it just shows. And it's amazing.
Wow.
So.
Yeah, no, that's the thing, man. When people realize, like, what I mean, all this stuff is just so cool to me because actors, it's not just that they're somehow like these bizarre psychic chameleons that can turn into fictional characters, but then also add their own soul into it in a way that adds to it. But the technical side of it is insane that mm-hmm. they just in the midst of memorizing these lines,
they bring these ideas that you're like, what? How
what
are you doing that?
Fuck? Yeah.
Yeah,
it's so cool. Do you last question?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry because this does sound like a cheesy end of an interview with a director question, but I legitimately mean it. What's next?
Oh man, well I really want to make a small movie next. I think like soon. I have an idea for like just a thriller that I can make small because these things take so long.
Yeah,
like, the biggest thing about this for me is like these gaps, these years of time in between, and I'm just at the point now where. I like doing things where it is a little bit bigger. You have more resources and people. It's really nice. But I'm also like, why can't we just do this other little tiny thing?
Sure.
We have everything we need.
Yeah.
We have amazing talent. We have a boom guy, camera. You can shoot a movie on anything now.
Yeah.
That has a lens mount and make it'll look like a movie.
Yeah.
So I think I kind of want that. I kind of want my career to sort of become that where it's something like this. Something really small. Like I want to do something in like two locations, but interesting, you know? And then I have this movie I really, 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 really want to make.
Cool.
That costs more money. But it's like an 80s cop movie in the cocaine era.
Cool.
And in Miami. And a cop goes undercover, but it's sort of like a good fella Scarface, but with a modern sort of twist to the voiceover. And it's like yeah, it's the same thing. It gets emotional, but he thinks like it's kind of. Have you ever seen like Vampire's Kiss?
No.
You would love that movie.
I'm watching it tonight.
Nicolas Cage. Have you ever seen the clip of the A, B, C, D?
I haven't seen it. I like
it's a famous clip, but I think it's his most interesting film. But it's kind of like an American Psycho thing. Like in my movie,
cool.
He think this guy in this cocaine infused adventure he's going on. He thinks he may or may not be turning into a werewolf.
Ooh.
In the heart of Miami, and you're like, is he? Awesome. Isn't he? And he's coked out of his mind.
That's fucking.
And it's like
cool.
More down the middle for me. It's like it has a little bit more mainstream, but the weird's still in there.
Right.
But it's like a big 80s epic.
You've written the script.
I have a draft of it done. I'm like doing a revision of it now, and I'm telling everybody I can about it that's here. So,
wow, yeah, because that's I get wanting to do the little thing in between because you got to wait for this to, whatever way it's going to make its way to people's TVs or the theaters or whatever, you have to wait. And then once the ripple hits from this, I really think there's going to be a big ripple from this one, you'll get all the funding you want to make the next thing.
I hope you're correct. That would be the dream, that would be the absolute dream.
I mean. To be honest, I've been wrong every time I've made this prediction.
I'm going to end it on that, yeah.
Thank you so
much. Thank you,
thank
man.
You for making these great movies, and I can't wait to see what's around the corner.
I'm such a huge fan of you, too. This was
thank
just
you.
So great. And you're like the great philosopher of comedy.
Oh,
and
thank you.
You're just highly intelligent, so it means the world to me to hear you say this stuff, so.
Thank you. You're the best. Thanks for coming on
the show.
Thank
you.
And I will, everybody, you must go see Mermaid. Go see Butt Boy.
See both of them.
All the links will be at the comment section on YouTube or at DuncanTrussell.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you, man.
That was Tyler Kornack, everybody. Go watch Butt Boy. And as soon as you're able to, definitely watch Mermaid. You'll be glad you did. You can find all my stand-up dates at DuncanTrussell.com. I'll see you next week. Until then, Hare Krishna.